Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
We're fortunate to have Lester Austin with us today. Lester is a retired senior public affairs specialist for Social Security Administration. And with us is guest co-host John Elliott, retired Fed, retired seminar presenter, but knower of all things Fed. We're going to take this from its easy and build it up to its not so easy.
Great, great. And that's a great question to lead off with, because a lot of folks want to know, how do I qualify for Social Security benefits? What do I have to do? Well, first of all, you have to work. You have to work, and you have to earn the right to be entitled to a Social Security benefit. And you have to earn so many quarters, credits or periods. They're one of the same, depending on what generation you might be with. Some call it a period, some call it a quarter, some call it a credit. But just for conversation's sake this morning, I'm going to call it a quarter. You have to earn so many quarters of coverage, and that's based on your age. For those individuals that are born 1930 and later, they would have to earn 40 quarters of coverage. That represents 10 years of work. That work can be sporadic or that work can be consecutive. But the bottom line is they must have 10 years of work on the Social Security covered employment.
So we don't have to work in a particular calendar quarter. In theory, we'll talk about the dollar magnitude. We could meet it in a day if we made a lot of money for the year. And you get then four quarters for that one day's work during the year today, if it was a lot of money.
That's absolutely correct. And since you brought me here, let me just to speak on the issue of how to earn a quarter. To earn a quarter this year, you have to earn $1,220 for each quarter. You can only earn four quarters a year. For an example, if you're talking to somebody and they tell you that last year that they earned six quarters under Social Security, I would encourage you to stop talking to them about Social Security, because you can only earn four quarters a year, January, February, March being one, April, May, June being two, July, August, September being three, October, November, December being four. During each one of those quarters, you have to earn, prior to 1978, at least $50 in a quarter in order to be entitled to a quarter of coverage. Effective in 1978, the amount escalated, whereas today a quarter of coverage costs you $1,220.
But the test changed.
Yeah,
right?
Bob pointed out correctly, that you could earn all four quarters in a day if you made $5,000.
Effective in 1978, you no longer had to work and earn a minimum of $50 per quarter. At that time in 1978, it was $250 per quarter. So if you went out effective in 1978 and later, and you earned, say, 1978, $1,000 on the first quarter, the middle of the year, the last quarter of the year, you have earned your four quarters of coverage. But what's important to remember, that fourth quarter of credit will not be issued to your account until the beginning of the quarter period. This year, $4,880 is what's necessary to earn four quarters of coverage. So, Bob or John, if you earned that today, you've earned your four quarters of coverage.
We might have to work till tomorrow, too. But let's say that we worked a month. Let's say we worked 2 months and we hit that number.
Then you've earned your full quarter.
Right.
And then when you look at the computing of the Social Security benefit, it varies. It's based on what you put in. And that's what I mean, varies. Based on what you put in is what you're going to get back. So if you put in a little bit, you're going to get a little bit. Put in a lot, you'll get a lot back.
But the system, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, is quote, tilted a little bit to somebody that maybe doesn't make a ton of money. So if we have initial coverage, we're in, whereas each additional dollar amount or year that goes in doesn't come to the same ratio.
That's absolutely correct. What Social Security does, it indexes those earnings. So what I mean by indexing is when one looks back in high school and college, they index those earnings to bring them up to the current day standard, current day money amount. So we index the earnings. And therefore, when a person files for benefits, we index those earnings from the high 35 years of earnings to pay them the most back that we can possibly pay them. On an average worker working an average lifetime, Social Security is about a 42% replacement rate on an average.
Okay, so what we're building here now is the understanding of how it works and how you get the key to open the door. Now, we're talking about an individual. What if the individual happens to be married currently or was married in the past? This opens up a lot of different tree branches to look at. But let's just say they're married and they stay married. Does one qualify? And if the other one never worked, do they qualify?
Yes, that's a possibility that can exist. A person may have a spouse who's never worked or who may earn the 40 quarters on their own record, but they had low earnings. Therefore, they're going to be entitled to a low benefit. So that spouse could be eligible on their spouse's record if their spouse is going to be eligible for more. So therefore, using you as an example, say you're entitled to $1,000 a month for your spouse who's never worked or during their earning enough quarters to be qualified on their own record, they could be eligible for $500.
Okay.
At full retirement age.
Of course, my spouse works harder than I do, but the point being is, I like what you said, and that was the question. One works, one doesn't work. All righty, now let's say one works and makes a bunch and the other one makes half of a bunch. It really doesn't make any difference, as I understand it, as long as you hit, like you mentioned, the dollar quarter amount. So at the end of a period of time, in theory, if they both met the maximum quarters each year for however long it takes, they both would get the same amount?
Well, no, they won't both get the same amount, but both can qualify on their own record.
I thought you'd say that.
I just have to bring it like it is and tell it like it is, because that's my only defense, is the truth. And if they didn't want me to tell the truth, I wouldn't have been let out the house. So now I'm loose in America. But the fact of the matter is, if a spouse, using the example with you and your spouse, you worked under Social Security, you've earned your 40 quarters, you're going to be entitled to $1,000 a month, for an example. Your spouse has worked on their own record, they're going to be entitled to, say, $250 on their own record. So therefore, what will happen is your spouse will be entitled to an additional $250 on your record to bring them up to that 50%. If the spouses on their own record benefit is equal to 50% or greater, they will not be eligible for any benefits on your record. If it's less than 50%, we're going to pay them on their own record, and any difference we can pay them on your record to bring them to that money amount. That's looking at full retirement age.
Okay, this is, we set the standard, but we have people that listen to this show that are, if you will, millennials and whatever the one in between, and I guess everybody in here is a baby boomer. But regardless of your stage of your career, do you have a Social Security account where you can, what do you call it, click, stick, and stroll?
Yes, you have a Social Security account, and I would encourage folks to establish their Social Security account by visiting Social Security's website at socialsecurity.gov, and I would say click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it. There's so much information at Social Security's website talking about retirement benefits, disability benefits, survivor's benefits, and Medicare. And what's so important is that the American public, that statement that we used to mail out, we're now only mailing it out in certain situations. So people say, I want that statement. I like looking at those earnings over the year to make sure that they're reported correctly. And that's what you want to do. You want to make sure that your earnings are reported correctly. So visit Social Security's website at socialsecurity.gov. Click on it, stick on it, stroll through it. Go to My Account. And you want to establish My Account. And in order to create your account, we're dealing with Internal Revenue Service. We're dealing with the credit bureaus and the information that we have on our own to establish what is called security questions. Well, these security questions are designed to protect you. Designed to protect you. Dealing with these entities that I've just indicated, we're going to come up with security questions just like what the bank does. And once you answer those questions, you'll be able to establish your account.
And those questions, for those of you all listening that have never looked at it before, those questions aren't give me four numbers, one with an exclamation point and one. It's pretty well encrypted, which is good because you don't want somebody.
That's correct. You don't want somebody to be acting as if they're you. And by doing this also, you can prevent identity theft to a certain degree. I mean, you're going to have folks out there that are going to try to be stealing your identity. But this with Social Security, we can make sure that this is you by answering those security questions in order to establish my account. Once you have established my account, you're going to get, you'll be able to look at your Social Security history record. From the day you start working to present, we're going to tell you what you're going to be entitled to at reduced retirement benefits, full retirement benefits. Then we'll tell you what you'll be entitled to if you become disabled, what the survivors could be entitled to. You'll be able to make sure that your record is correct. So therefore, you can use this as a financial tool. That's what it's designed for, to help you plan for your retirement.
Of course, we're a benefit seminar company, retirement planning seminar company. What I'm getting at here is, regardless of age, somebody very young in the workforce, 5-10 years, has got some history to make a calculation, can look at what they would be entitled to upon their retirement after meeting a certain age, and there's three graduations of that. But it's very important for the planning, if for no other reason, to know what income there is. There's going to be this income and whatever other income you might be entitled to, whether it's a pension, whether it's money in a 401k plan or something like that. And the best time to start planning is as soon as you can.
That's absolutely correct. I know as we sit here, you can think about grandma and grandpa tell you if you put a nickel up every time you got paid, at the end of the day, when you stop work, you would have some money. Well, this is what it's all about. It's planning. And in addition to the statement, Social Security has calculators. Calculators where you can go on to the Social Security's website at socialsecurity.gov, and you could visit one of the calculators, and you can project. How about if I earn this amount based on what you've already earned? And you can plug in those amounts, and you can do what if situations. What if this? What if I work longer? What if I stop? What if I earn this amount? And you can project what you're going to be entitled to.
All righty, and then folks listening, this is not just inside the Beltway. This is also outside the Beltway. I mean, Lester and I have always been inside the Beltway. John was midway between the Beltway and California, correct? Is that where you grew up?
In Chicago, but I currently live outside the Beltway, but not very far outside the Beltway in Virginia. But, yeah, I'm a Midwesterner.
Okay, so again, regardless of where you're listening, even offshore, because people do access this show offshore, and they should not feel excluded because they should be included.
Social Security affects 167 million people. Social Security pays many benefits. Right now, we're paying approximately 59 million people once a month receive a Social Security benefit, and most of those are direct deposit to their account.
Okay. Now, we're talking about planning here, and I think it's time to take a break, and we're going to listen to planning from another perspective.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WAPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WAPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WAPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WAPA today at waepa.org. WAPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
And at the break, Lester said, why don't we go back and look at this spousal benefit just to make sure anybody listening's got it. So, one spouse works, one spouse doesn't, both spouses work, but the spousal benefit, let's say that didn't work, is what, half of what the working spouse would make?
Yes. In a living situation, that spouse would be entitled to 50% of whatever the deceased would have been entitled to. Looking at the widows and widowers benefit, then you have the divorced spousal benefit. The divorced spouse is equal to 50%. 50%, excuse me, let me retract it for a minute. In a survivor situation, the widow or widower is entitled to 100% of whatever the deceased would have been entitled to. So that $1,000 benefit that we indicated you would be entitled to, your spouse could be entitled, who turns into the widow because you deceased, would be entitled to the $1,000.
And another example along this line, let's say there are two working spouses, but one spouse makes a higher Social Security benefit. When the higher earning spouse dies, then the widow or widower moves up to the amount the deceased spouse was getting.
That's correct.
So just a little extra twist on it. Now, the 50% figure, you have to be at your full retirement age.
That's correct. 50% is the full retirement age. And
you can collect at 62, but it's not going to be, it's going to be lower than 50%.
At 62, the benefits are reduced by approximately, if you look at a 50% benefit, they'd be entitled approximately 37.5%.
Okay, now
at
I need
62. So the benefits are reduced by 0.5% approximately for each month that the elect receive the benefit before the full retirement.
So if you're in poor health, for example, you might want to consider either taking your own benefit as early as possible, which is 62, or in the case of a spousal benefit as well.
That would be based on the individual decision.
Sure, it's your call. But
yeah, they have the right to file for benefits as early as 62. And being that spouse, the primary individual being the husband or the wife would have to be receiving benefits on their record in order for the spouse to receive benefits.
Okay, I'm a little slow here. If the first age I can apply for and receive Social Security is 62, that's not my, quote, full retirement age, even though I might be retired.
That's correct. For those individuals being born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement age for them is 66. And full retirement age continue to go up. For those individuals born 1960 and later, full retirement age is 67. So those individuals born between 43 and 54, when they take that 100% benefit at full retirement age, if they decide not to take it at that time but to take it before, as early as age 62, they will have a 25% reduction in their benefit. Once you take a reduced benefit, the benefit is always reduced. The only increase in that benefit is the cost of living increase, which this year was a 1.7% increase, which is about $21 on a Social Security check. That's one way. The additional way is one might get a part-time job or work on the Social Security covered employment. At the conclusion of the year, Social Security will look at those additional earnings and take those in consideration to possibly increase that benefit.
Okay, so what I'm hearing, if I do it too early, I could, if you will, suffer a decrease. But if I wait now and I'm 62 and I'm going, well, I'm going to do some part-time work, that'll kind of cover the fact that I'm not getting Social Security. But what's my reward as I wait? If I wait a year, two, three, four, five, isn't there kind of a rough percentage that it would increase if I waited a year or two or three?
Well, once you work past your full retirement age, a lot of folks now, instead of them retiring at full retirement age 66, they're going to work until they're 70. They're working way into their 70s now. People are living longer, working longer. So say that you decide you don't want to take it at your full retirement age 66, that you want to wait. Well, the benefit is increased by 8% per year for each year that you wait. So that's 8% for 4 years. That's a 32% increase over that 100% benefit. That's the reward. You get a higher benefit. But then again, it's a personal choice that an individual must make.
But the break-even point, and this is, of course, just a rough estimate, from taking it at 66, is it's a long break-even point.
I used to advise folks that when they elect to take the benefits at age 62 versus waiting at age 65, that the break-even point took anywhere between 13 to 15 years before a person would hit that.
Right.
So you're talking about age 77. But then again, some folks have financially planned things out where they can wait, and they decide to do it so that their Social Security benefit can be higher. But again, this is a personal choice. With the Social Security statement, one going to the Social Security website, checking out just what they're going to be entitled, they can anticipate and plan those situations to see how they can financially be ready for retirement.
Okay. So, again, we've talked about qualifying. We've talked about the first day you can, but maybe why you wouldn't want to apply and take it. especially if, like Lester says, people are working longer, they might not need this. Others might be in poor health and say, listen, I don't know that I'm going to make it a ton more years. I might as well take it while I can.
And a good point right there is when a person is under their full retirement age, this year they can receive Social Security and earn up to $15,720. $15,720. So that's somebody working part-time, and they can still get their full Social Security benefit or the reduced Social Security benefit. If that person is under the full retirement age, that's how much they can earn. And for every $2 they go over that amount, we want them to reimburse us for one. Once a person reaches their full retirement age, they can earn this year $41,880. So in the year that they turn their full, let me just put it like this. In the year in which a person turns their full retirement age, this year they can earn $41,880. Once they reach their full retirement age, they can earn and work as much as they want.
Okay, now full retirement age is, again, a Social Security term, not an employer's term.
That's correct. And with Social Security, full retirement age is based on what year you were born in. If you were born between 1943 and 1954, full retirement age is 66. If you were born 1956, 66 and 4 months. 1959, 66 and 10 months. And for those individuals born 1960 and later, full retirement age is 67.
Okay, now if you're not tracking, hopefully most people listening are tracking at least 90% or better. But if you're not, you can go to that website, and what do you do once you get there? You click.
You can click on it, stick on it, and scroll through it, and it can show you. And if you don't see it right away, you can go up to the search engine. And this is Social Security's website, so it's safe and secure. Our encryption, the security level that we use is the highest, and we have folks working 24/7 to make sure there are no invasions into our Social Security system. Like I said, we pay 59 million people once a month, so we wouldn't want to have any problems like that. But they can visit Social Security's website, and they can obtain all this information that we're talking today. And if they want, they can just put in the search engine box up at top how to earn Social Security benefits.
Okay, some of us are not so great with computers. Let's say that I'm a little computer phobic. Can I go to an office and talk to a person?
Yes, you can. Matter of fact, the good news is today, beginning today, our Social Security office will be open Monday, Tuesday, Thursdays, and Fridays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. In other words, it was 9 to 3, but today, effective today on, it'll be 9 to 4 p.m. on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. On Wednesday, we're still going to close the office a half a day, and that's so that we can continue to process that workload that we're taking in from these interviews that we're getting. But there's so much that one can do without visiting the Social Security office. So again, they can visit our website. Matter of fact, to file a retirement claim online takes you less than 20 minutes.
Okay. How many new applicants, if you will, come in a day or a week or a month today?
It is no way that I can tell you that
I read something like 20,000 a day. Could it be that many?
10 to 15,000 people a day is the estimate when you look at the baby boom generation population. So we have approximately 1,250 offices across America. So you can see that we encourage many of those folks to go online and file those claims if possible. Otherwise, they would go to the Social Security. They would have to take a number. And as a possibility, they would have to wait for an interview. But another thing that one could do instead of going into the office waiting, they can make an appointment online. They can make an appointment by calling our 1-800 number and have someone set up an appointment for them. Or, again, they can file online in the convenience of their home. And when they file online, we will be pulling that application in the next day. If it's on a weekend, we're going to pick it up on that Monday. And if there's any questions about the information that you provided, someone will be calling you to get an answer to that question.
Okay, we have some emails. I will be applying for my retirement benefits soon, Social Security, that is. I have an expired residency card, but can I still apply for benefits?
They have an expired. They would have to contact the State Department because I think they would want to update their residency card to make sure that they're here in the country legally.
I thought you'd say that. Okay, and then...
And even though under the prior residency card, they were allowed to work, and if they're allowed to work by the State Department, Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, let me say, Immigration and Naturalization Service, then they've been paying into Social Security so they could be entitled to a benefit. But we want to make sure that that documentation is correct.
Okay, here's another email, and it says, I don't feel comfortable doing my retirement application online. I called to make an appointment, and I was told that maybe I couldn't do it until May. This is to make an appointment to one-on-one. But if somebody walked into the office today, tomorrow.
Anyone that walks into Social Security, we're going to see them before the end of the day and take care of their business. What I would encourage that person is they could call and make an appointment where someone could call them at home and or at work or wherever they want, and we could take that claim over the telephone for them, and they wouldn't have to go in, so they can make an appointment that way. They can make an appointment to go into the Social Security office, which sometimes there is a little wait based on the calendar and the number of people that we can plug in to an office based on the staff that we have there. Or again, the person could file online. So they have different choices. But any way that they want to do it, we're going to accommodate them.
And you know what you're talking about, because I know at one point during your career, you were on the road visiting the elder folks.
Yes. Yes, I had the opportunity to visit what is called the centenarians of the Washington metropolitan area, those individuals 100 years of age and older. We just want to make sure that everything is going fine with their Social Security.
That's nice.
And that they're still alive.
Some people we did find that... We're not here.
Right.
And we had to make the necessary adjustments to the accounts.
Yes. We're now moving forward beyond the basics, and somebody qualifies. And then there's this provision. It's called file and suspend. Let's talk about it, but let's also mention that our president in the budget announcement is looking at this in the crosshairs to do away with it. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I don't want to get people unnecessarily excited without knowing there's a potential end to it. But how does file, and why would I file and say I don't want it?
Well, it's a number of reasons that folks do that, but one reason is that they might have a spouse, and their spouse could be eligible for benefits on their record. That's possible. So what happens is you have a spouse. In order to file and suspend, both parties must be full retirement age, first of all. They can't be filing for reduced benefits, but both parties have to be at least full retirement age. Using you and your spouse again, if you file for benefits, then your wife can file for benefits on your record. You can suspend yours, and we can pay your spouse.
Would my spouse have to be a certain age to do
full
this?
Retirement age.
Well, okay.
Both have to be full retirement age. And what is the reason? Why would people do that? Why would a couple decide to do that?
Well, what happened is the spouse could begin receiving on your record. You're not going to take it. So you're going to get those delayed retirement credits with 8%. So when you get those full delayed retirement credits at 8%, your spouse... At a later date, when you're entitled to this bigger benefit, their benefits will not go up based on those delayed retirement credits that you're going to be receiving in a living situation. Now, if you die, then your spouse can be entitled to 100% of whatever you're receiving.
So I have to sleep with one eye open?
Watch what you eat.
Okay. All righty. But remember, folks, this is was mentioned that it... But when you hear addresses, no disrespect to the current president, it could be any president, they throw out ideas and they may or may not stick.
And let me just elaborate. The file and suspend, folks do that. And what happened at one point was that a person could file a Social Security for Social Security and then receive benefits for a couple of years and then decide to pay it all back. So at one time, they could pay it all back. And we would take the money. But now a person only has 12 months to make that decision. See, that law was changed a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So now they only have 12 months. So after 12 months, that's the situation you will continue to deal with. If it's within the 12 months and you want to pay all the money back and delay filing for Social Security till a later date, you have the right to do that within the 12-month period from the date of the application.
Okay, some of the folks might be listening today, and here's the thought process. If I apply for this on my birthday, I'd get X dollars. And about 6 months into it, I'm listening to this show and go, maybe I want to get it now. Would I have to have worked the whole year to get the extra bump up that I would get if I didn't wait to the end of the year? In other words, if my year was, say, the end of September, my next bump up would be the end of September a year from now. But if I'm midway through, do I get the same bump up as if I waited for the whole year, or do I get some kind of fraction with that?
Yeah, you're going to get a fraction of that, because you're coming to us and you're saying, I have stopped working, and you're not going to work any longer. So at that point, we're going to use the prior year's W-2 information or tax return information that you have reported to Internal Revenue Service. And usually what we do is wait until the end of the year. For a person that's already receiving benefits, we wait to the end of the year. But you're just coming on, you're making the allegation, you're not going to go back to work. And if you do go back to work and to another job and earn additional monies, at the conclusion of that, then you'll let us know, so that possibly could increase that benefit that you're receiving, depending on the amount that you've earned.
Okay. I think this is time to take a break to think about what we just did, but not during the break. Think about what we're going to hear about at the break.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WAPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WAPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WAPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WAPA today at waepa.org. WAPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Okay, welcome back to NITP's For Your Benefit. We're here with Lester Austin, let's just make it short, Social Security expert. John Elliott, also a Social Security expert, federal benefits, retired Fed, and I'm kind of a tax guy. But at the break, we were just talking, and this was this provision that if I elected to take Social Security when I first retired. But after a few months, I'm going, I'm not so sure I don't want to go to work, but I had received Social Security benefits. But I understand from what we said right before the break, I can pay that back if I do it within a year.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that you can do. One, you can pay the money back. Or two, you can just call us up and say, look, I'm going to go back to work. I'm going to be earning this $70,000, $80,000 a year. So what we can do is put your benefits in suspense to prevent any overpayment from occurring versus you paying the money back. So then at the end of the day, when you do decide to stop working, then we can start your benefits. Say you receive three checks. Well, your benefit now is going to be reduced by that amount, those three checks. And that percentage that I indicated, 0.5%. So that means that a check will be reduced by 1.5% thereon at the point you decide to receive it.
Okay, we've got a caller.
If a first employee continues working to age 70 and accumulates a larger high 35 earning years than he had at age 66, will the increased earnings provide a greater spousal benefit for his wife?
If that person is working and still contributing to Social Security, they're going to be entitled to a higher benefit, because not only will they get a 32% increase over that 100% benefit, but we're talking about more money because they have not chosen to retire. Right now, the maximum benefit under Social Security is $2,663, and you can take the 32% increase over that amount. And that would be payable to an individual that has had maximum earnings throughout their working lifetime. The average benefit is about $1,220 a month. That's an average wage earner over their working life.
And that would also increase the spousal benefit, because the spousal benefit's based on a percentage of the...
That's correct.
Your
because
benefit.
Their spouse would be entitled to 50%.
All right, let's pick up another thing that isn't just so apparent. Not that any of the last few minutes have been so apparent. There's something called the windfall elimination provision. Am I entitled to a windfall, and why would it be eliminated?
Well, what the windfall elimination provision is that, remember earlier I said when you're in high school and college, that Social Security indexed those earnings to bring them up to current day value. Well, if a person's eligible for a pension that is not subject to Social Security, civil service pension, D.C. government pension, then therefore, if they're under the old system, the civil service retirement system, they're not paying into Social Security. So when we compute their benefit, we're going to remove that intended windfall. So they won't receive that. We're going to base their benefit on the actual earnings under Social Security. And that's what the windfall elimination provision
is
all
this,
about.
Our audience is primarily federal, so let's address the feds. If you're under the older civil service retirement system, as I was, and I'm drawing an annuity based on CSRS, and I have my 40 credits, therefore I'm entitled to a Social Security benefit, and that's my case as well, because I worked in the private sector before government and I worked in the private sector after government, so I got my 40 credits. But I will get hit by the windfall elimination provision because all my entire federal annuity, I didn't pay into Social Security. So if you have less than 21 years of substantial Social Security earnings, you can count on about half of what you would get if there were no windfall elimination provision, which was a matter of law. And I think it came about in around 1983.
It was 1986.
86.
January 1,
okay.
1986
All
is
right.
when the windfall elimination provisions went in.
But it's going to affect CSRS people. Now, if you transferred to CSRS and you had at least 5 years under CSRS, so you have a CSRS component, you still can potentially get hit by the windfall elimination provision because part of your annuity is based on not paying into Social Security. So it can be a significant reduction to your Social Security. Now, if you're one of those people like under CSRS offset, and any listeners out there know who they are, where they were paying into Social Security for part of their career, if they acquire 30 years of substantial Social Security earnings, they are not affected by the windfall elimination provision.
Okay. Now,
so it works different ways. But if they are affected by the windfall elimination provision, as you indicated earlier, they're entitled to, say, $1,000 or less, they can cut that amount in half approximately. If it's greater than $1,000, they can take off about $500 off of that.
Yeah,
that
if you
match.
Just for example, if you have 29 years, not 30, of substantial earnings, you will only have a 5% reduction. Once you hit 30, you'd have no reduction.
Right.
So, and once you hit 21 years, the reduction is 5% less per year if you keep earning.
All of a sudden, the phone lines are blinking.
Yes, my question is, what's the opportune time, the most opportune time, when you turn 70 to get the full Social Security? And I turned 70 September 9th. Do I apply for July, August, or September?
Well, I hope that you already have the Medicare insurance.
Yes.
And if you already have the Medicare insurance, then we know that you're turning 70, so we can begin sending that check out to you. At that point, I would check with my bank account to see if I had any extra funds there.
Right.
Have you done so?
I always make sure there's plenty. In other words, when I turn ready to turn 70, I just apply?
No, it's nothing for you to do. It's already done. So we can begin to check.
Medicare.
Make sure.
What if the federal employee...
In other words, you're saying this is your Social Security benefit check, correct?
Right. Social Security
Because you've
check.
Already got signed up for the Medicare Part A.
Part A and Part B. Well, and yeah, Part A and Part B, yeah.
Now, the other thing that might happen is your Part B premium is higher based on the gross amount of your income.
Right.
Right. So now you understand that. And now what we're going to do is begin taking that out of your Social Security check
right. So
you won't be paying on a quarterly basis.
Yes. Yeah, I see. What I've done is I got a bank account, and they take it out. Medicare takes it out of the bank account. And they
okay.
always make sure of it. So when I get close to 70, Social Security is supposed to do everything for me?
Yeah, Social Security will kick in, and we'll begin taking that that money amount out of your Social Security check that's payable to you.
But I start to apply for Social Security, they're going to do it for me.
There's nothing for you to do.
Oh, God, I feel like Beetle Bailey now.
All right, who was the captain in Beetle Bailey?
I don't know.
Now, if you feel that you need additional information, you feel like you want to know just how much that check is going to be, you can contact us at 1-800-772-1213. Again, that's 1-800-772-1213 to find out just when that check will be hitting the bank.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're talking about Lieutenant Fuzz, maybe?
Lieutenant Fuzz, but...
I don't know who the captain is.
Our captain is telling us. We got another caller. Get on it, guys. All righty.
Just a quick question on survivor benefits. My husband and I currently plan to do a 62-70 combination because we're both working and we're both probably within about $10,000 of each other. My question is, if I start taking my Social Security at 62 and he continues to work until age 70 and he predeceases me, would I have an opportunity then to restructure some recapture on his or transfer to his Social Security or
yes.
get a portion of it?
Yes. If something happens to your husband, you're going to be entitled to a one-time payment called the lump sum death payment of $255. In addition, you would be able to file on his record for the widow's benefit, and we would pay you the difference of what you're receiving on your own and that which you could be entitled to on his to bring you up to that 100% of what he was receiving. Now, if you took a reduced benefit on your own, but you didn't take a reduced benefit on your own,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we would have to look at that, but you would be most likely entitled to the 100% benefit on his.
Excellent. You'll thank
be
you
entitled
so much.
To what he was receiving.
Thanks for calling.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Now, I have to make one comment because I'm a tax person. People will talk about, gee, if I take Social Security, it's going to be more income. Social Security is the most tax-efficient payment you're going to get from the government. Your annuity is nice, but it's a whole lot more taxable than not. Social Security, at worst, is 85% taxable, which is another way to say 15% non-taxable at the federal, and generally non-taxable whatsoever on the state.
Yeah, if an individual has taxable income, and when we talk about taxable income, we're looking at what Internal Revenue's definition is of taxable income.
But of course.
So they're looking at everything.
Yeah.
So you're talking about if an individual's got $25,000 or greater, or a couple with $32,000 of taxable income or greater, their Social Security benefit could be taxable anywhere from 50% to 85%.
But some of them can be nothing, but it has to be very low.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Usually if a person has earnings at a certain level, they will not be paying taxes on that amount.
Yeah, but the point is, even if you're a fat cat, the most you're going to pay taxes on is 85% of it and nothing on the state.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, let's come on back. This windfall elimination, one more thing. Individual, say, is working, like John said, they're working under the old system, CSRS or the offset.
Mm-hmm.
And they were married, but they were married for at least 10 years. I think this is important. And unfortunately, that person, the ex-spouse, died. The current individual is no longer a spouse, can collect on their Social Security?
They're eligible to receive benefits on their Social Security. Now, we talked about the windfall elimination provision. The windfall elimination provision, which became effective January 1, 1986, affects the worker being you. That's your Social Security number. You worked under that number. You contributed under that number. We're talking about you. What affects the spouse and the survivors is called the government pension offset provision. So the government pension offset provision looks at those spouses that are receiving a government annuity on their own record, not a survivor's annuity based on their spouse dying, but based on an annuity that they have worked and earned the right to. So we're going to look at two-thirds the amount of that annuity that they're receiving and use that amount to offset any benefits payable to them as the widow or the widower.
I'm with you, but my comment was they were still working.
If they are still working?
They get the full from the deceased spouse's Social Security until they retire, and then when they retire, this kicks in. Their CSRS.
Okay.
I know because I've got more than a few people.
I see you trying to throw a snag in this.
No, I'm just trying
but
to inform.
But you're actually right. That's a fact, man. I was taking into consideration they were not working.
I know that.
And the catch is, if they're still working, they're entitled to 100%
yes.
of whatever the deceased would have been entitled to while they are working.
Got it.
They still have those earnings limitations that I spoke about earlier, under full retirement age. That was the $15,720. And once they work before retirement age, before in the year in which they turn, $41,880. But once they reach their full retirement age, they can work and earn as much as they want, get the government pension, well, get the Social Security benefit, and still receive their federal annuity. Now, once they stop working, then the GPO, the government pension offset provisions,
will
kick in.
It wiped it out in this case. Or
right.
Say,
take my wife. She's
Henny Youngman?
Retired. Yes, please. She's retired under CSRS. Even though I will get a Social Security benefit, albeit reduced by the windfall elimination provision, she will never be able to collect because she's a CSRS, CSRS annuitant, and that's the government pension offset. So she will never get anything based on my Social Security earnings.
So again, the government pension offset provision affects the spouse and the survivors.
Right.
But she's eligible on your account now. She's eligible on your account. But what she would be entitled to would be zero.
Right.
And if you die, she gets the one-time payment of $255.
Her CSRS pension would have to be so low for her to get anything. It's hardly even worth talking about. There is a formula, but we don't have time to get into that. But if you're CSRS spouse, count on pretty much getting next to nothing.
But at least let Social Security look at that to make sure what you would or would not be entitled to. And they can contact us by filing at the website of socialsecurity.gov, filing for the widow or widow's benefits. And we can determine based on what they should be entitled to, if anything.
But here, where the earlier call or something was automatic, what we're talking about here is you got to say, here I am. I'm entitled to this based on my prior spouse's passing and their years.
That's correct. The gentleman has already filed for Medicare. He filed for retirement benefits at the same time, but because of his earnings, we placed him probably in suspense. Now, the other thing I wanted to say about the gentleman caller was that those delayed retirement credits would be applicable to him, not to the spouse. She'll be entitled to whatever that he would be entitled to at a full retirement age of 50%. And then if something happens to her, then those delayed retirement credits will be based on the amount that she included in the amount that she would be entitled to as a widow.
Okay, the captain just told us we have less than 2 minutes. So, Lester, final wrap-up? That's tough with you.
I'll just say visit Social Security's website at socialsecurity.gov. Again, click on it, stick on it, stroll through it. There's a lot of information. You do not have to visit the Social Security office if you do not want to, but for your convenience, for the American public convenience, the office is now open Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Fridays until 4 p.m., 9 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And I would urge those of you all listening to pass the word and go to our website. We don't sell anything, so it's NITPINC.com. You can listen to these shows, webinars, read columns and the like. And John?
Happy St. Patrick's Day, my favorite holiday of the year.
Ah, yes. All righty. So we all celebrate St. Patty's Day. Pass the word about the show, and we'll be on next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.
Join AFCEA Washington, D.C. chapter on April 2nd for the 6th Annual Cybersecurity Technology Summit. Keynote speakers will feature NSA Director Admiral Michael S. Rogers and DHS Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity Phyllis Schneck. Register today to hear senior military officers and government cyber leaders address challenges and strategies for mitigating tomorrow's evolving cyber threat environment. For more information, visit dcafceachapters.org.
In times like these, violence in our schools is a reality. So it's important to know how to prevent such tragedies from happening. Talk to your kids. Explain to them the dangers of weapons at school. And tell them that if they see a student with a weapon or even hear someone talking about having one, they need to report it immediately. Tell them if something doesn't look right or seem right to you, speak up. Get to know who your child is spending time with and where they are at all times. If you notice that your child has sudden mood or behavior changes, or seems to always be angry or sad, talk to a teacher, administrator, or medical professional. Be a role model for them and settle your own conflicts without resorting to violence. School should be a safe place for our children. We all need to work together to keep it that way. Let's put an end to these tragedies. Ask your school to adopt an anti-violence program. Visit ncpc.org to learn more on how to keep our children safe. That's ncpc.org.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.